Welcome to the CX, AI, and Outsourcing Podcast, a show about the people, technology, and economics that are shaping the customer support industry. My name is John Walter, and today we have a conversation with Keshav Kirupa Dinakaran, founder and CEO of Lumini. As you can tell by my reaction on this episode, the technology developed by Lumini is mind-blowing. They use machine learning technology to automate routine back-end tasks performed by customer support agents. But what is most insane is how their machines are automatically learning to automate simply through observation. This, my friends, is a game changer. Routine tasks that are not directly associated with communicating with a customer often occupies minutes of an agent's time for each customer interaction. Therefore, this technology has the potential to save large enterprises millions and millions of customer support dollars while allowing agents to focus on what they actually signed up to do, that is, talk with customers. As you will hear on this episode, Keshav is an extraordinary person who has developed amazing technology. During our conversation, I was personally dumbfounded by Lumini's process of teaching machines to learn how to automate through the simple observation of agents completing tasks. I was at a loss for words, which is not a good thing for a podcast host. I hope to have a follow-up conversation with Keshav as I continue to contemplate the ramifications of this technology in the customer support industry. Now, let's get started. Keshav with Lumini, thank you so much for taking the time to talk, man. I've come across your technology. I think it's really cool, and it's accomplishing something that a lot of companies need, and some BPOs are finding great advantage doing that type of tactic. So I think there's a huge demand for this. And also, you seem like one of the world's most interesting people in general, just looking at your LinkedIn profile, reading the Forbes 30 under 30 about you. And so I'm just very excited to be talking today. Thanks for taking the time.
Likewise. Thanks for having me.
So let's take a step back real quick. I saw on your LinkedIn profile, you said you did a bike ride from across the Silk Road. Is the Silk Road, is that from like the Mediterranean to China?
Historically, it's actually back when it was first formed, it was somewhere in Italy to Xi'an in China. So it's a cross that goes across all the way from Europe into Turkey and then through Central Asia and then into China.
Amazing. How long did that take?
So I joined the trip to do it from sort of what we call kind of Europe to Asia. So we started in Turkey and then ended in China. The whole trip, I did with a few other people, it was 84 days and about 2,600 miles.
Wow. And I imagine not all of those roads were very bicycle friendly.
More than 85% of it was not. So it was quite the trip. It's so funny. I feel so spoiled now biking in Palo Alto because I'm like, what am I doing now? So.
Yeah. I'm a wimp when it comes to biking. If I don't have I don't even want a bike lane. I want a path that is entirely separate from a road for me to start riding.
That's so funny.
And so I applaud your bravery.
I feel like I'm becoming that very much so now.
Yes, yeah. You get spoiled.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. It was quite the trip. It was very life-changing.
Yeah. And then also, I saw in the Forbes 30 under 30 article about you, do you still hold the Guinness World Record for the Rubik's Cube solutions in 1 hour?
Oh, trust. I feel like I'm going to jinx it now that many people are still asking about this, but weirdly enough, I still hold the world record for it. Been over 7 years plus, since I broke it, but still standing. We'll see how long we can keep it. I feel like I should just stop talking about it because the more people hear it, they're just going to come.
Yeah, you got to be careful. You're going to make some people jealous and they're going to be training. But I saw that you beat you did it like 200 and something times. Do you recall the number?
Yeah, the official record was 290, I think. And previous record was at 210. So it was a good leap for the community, for sure.
Yeah, you must have found a technique or something that totally set it apart to break it by that many, by 80 solutions. You must have just had a totally unique way of approaching it. So that's very cool. I won't ask you to divulge your secrets.
No, there's no real secret, but what's really funny is you sort of introduced a little bit of what Lumini was in the beginning, but what's fascinating is at some point, I was one of the, so that in Rubik's Cube, we calculate something called turns per second, which is how many turns can you do in a second? And at some point I was in probably the one of the fastest like turns per second solvers in the world. And, you know, it was like 15, 16 turns per second. And what's really interesting was I wasn't the fastest individual solver because I had very inefficient solving methods, meaning really, really good world-class RubyCube solver would have significantly lower turns per second, but would have incredible efficiency. So most people would be able to solve RubyCubes in like 40, 42 steps or 42 turns. But for me, it was always in the 60s or early 70s. And so I spent my entire career through the 6-7 years that I was professionally solving, spending all of my time actually reducing the number of steps to optimize my RubyCube stuff, which is really funny because it's exactly what we're doing at Luminac today. And this is not a story. And like, I only realized this now 3 years into the company. I was like, this is so oddly like familiar now, because it's kind of what my career was in RubyCubes. And now the whole job is Luminac to reduce the number of steps that people take to kind of solve a ticket or an issue with the BPS.
Yeah, that's a good segue. Let's go into that. So tell us about, what does Luminac do?
Yeah, so Luminac is an enterprise AI automation platform. We do something called robotic process automation. So what that really means is, I'll take a very simple example, right? Which is a company, right, has maybe 20 or 25 very mission critical kind of processes. And of these like mission critical processes, these mission critical processes have a ton of like manual work, right? That manual work is kind of done by humans, just basically copy pasting data, jumping between different systems and clicking a bunch of places to perform a certain action. And what that causes is actually four issues. It causes kind of productivity loss, right? People are a lot slower at their jobs. Error rates or mistakes, right? When people doing that manual work, as humans, we tend to make mistakes and therefore causes sets of downstream effects. The third is just burnout. We don't like, as humans, we should not be doing very, very low cognitive work. And then in the end, the worst thing of it all, which is customers get dissatisfied because they're not getting their answers or they're not basically solving their issues as quickly as possible. And so what Luminac basically built is you can basically take those processes and you can walk Luminac systems through exactly what you do. So if you take a refund example and you're jumping between your admin system, your payment processor, and let's say a shipping system or something, you can show Luminac that exact process and Luminac will watch it. And then it's able to replicate that exact same workflow. And you can programmatically kind of build logic into it to just automate away that repetitive work so you can focus on the human cognitive work.
Okay, let's take a step back for a second and help me understand this. So it sounds like you simply walk Luminac through the process. So is it literally you activate the program and you have an agent just clicking through the usual process, and by observing that, the machine is able to learn how to replicate it?
That is exactly right. So you literally walk Luminac systems through the process, and we have a little dialogue box where you're actually explaining what you're doing. So when it comes to like logic, like when there's logic involved, right? So for example, like if you're going to process a refund of like, let's say, $35 when the order value is 50, it might have been because you subtracted the shipping cost. In those cases, you have to just explain what it is that you're doing and walk Luminac through those while explaining, like you're explaining to an intern. Our systems are able to understand that logic, plus watch you do it. And in combination, those generate an automation that the next time it'll show up as a little button on your workspace where you can click that button to perform that same action in the background.
That is remarkable. This is so cool.
Thank you.
This is very impressive, because when I first heard about your company, I was wondering, hey, do you guys have a professional service where you go in and you're sending a team out to install stuff and implement software? But it seems like the software implements itself.
That it's kind of the state-of-the-art AI systems are coming together where we're able to do that so that humans can actually work on the things that matter. And it's pretty, like, even as someone who's working on this company, it is like, I have tears in my eyes every time I see it running live and seeing the reactions our customers have and seeing it up and running and seeing the difference it makes on a daily basis.
Unreal. All right. So let's talk about it for a second. You talk about this dialogue box where you can explain to the system why you're making certain decisions. Will that dialogue box apply, or will it appear for everyday agents as they're doing their work? If something is happening that doesn't make sense to the system, and so does it prompt the agent for guidance in certain circumstances?
So because of just sort of kind of the kinds of companies we work with, what we do is basically once you've walked Luminac through the process, it will then go through a rigorous set of almost like QA with the admin or whoever is the manager of those teams, just to make sure that we've covered every edge case. Right? When the agent is kind of walking through it, there's chances that we're missing certain parts of it. And so there's a rigorous kind of QA process where Luma is almost like testing a bunch of this stuff automatically and just being like, hey, it doesn't make sense in this case, it doesn't make sense in this case. And it's just like the admin is almost like, oh, that's right, this is why we do it differently, et cetera. And then once you deploy it live to production, and let's say an edge case pops up that we've never seen, it'll just ask the agent to proceed manually, and then it'll sort of flag it to the admin in that case, where the admin can then programmatically build that logic into it as well. In most cases, in 99% of cases, all those edge cases are taken care of even prior to production launch, but that's kind of what's happening.
Amazing. One reason I was very interested in this conversation and learning more about your company and trying to promote it within our community of friends and colleagues is that I see certain BPOs, so business process outsourcers, that's the term for outsourced call centers. The most innovative ones are leveraging AI as much as possible to drive efficiency in order to make themselves more competitive. You have the more legacy BPOs that are less interested in this type of thing because they're already entrenched with high levels of revenue from customers who are paying for human agent support on a large scale. But then you have some very innovative smaller ones that are willing to bring in tremendous efficiency and gain market share because currently their market share is very small and it's working. They are being very successful and taking away work from these big old players. And when I talk to them, it sounds like some of the greatest efficiencies are not just through the conversational AI front end applications, it's through going in and automating on the back end. And that's why I'm so excited about this, because you're making it so easy, and I'm sure it's going to become easier and easier over time for all companies to be able to drive just tremendous efficiency. And like you said, it's not just saving time, which is time turns out to be a lot of money in this instance when you're handling millions of calls and you have a lot of agents, sometimes tens of thousands of agents, but also you're improving the quality of life for the agent. Like you said, you know, we are made for creative tasks and intelligent tasks. And that's something we do see is groups that use automation. And I've never seen anybody talk about backend automation. All I have seen is tremendous reduction in attrition rates through using conversational AI to handle very basic communications that agents don't want to be handling anyways. And so I can see this also really improving the lives of the agents who are working at the companies that you are serving.
Yeah, it is. It's really fascinating, right? Because like we did a survey across all of our customers, as well as a bunch of people who are willing to kind of expose their data to us. And what was interesting is, you know, I've spoken to now thousands of CX and operations leaders across all the way from early stage startups to the Ciscos and the NVIDIAs of the world in terms of how large they are from a workforce standpoint. And what's really fascinating across the board, whether big, medium, small, medium, or large businesses, 80% of the time of an agent is spent on maybe 20% of the ticket. And that 80-20 rule applies so deeply here, because that 80% of time spent on those 20% of tickets is the time that's being spent clicking and tabbing and copy-pasting data, making very basic decisions that they have to keep track of instead of actually talking to the customer or working on things that only they can, us as humans, can do, right? And so when you go in and actually apply some of what then Lumina is doing is kind of giving that power back to the agent. And a lot of folks, not just like, you know, a lot of people don't want to stay in support. They want to learn a lot from it and then grow into a different role. And like, we want to empower that in some form, right? Because then the way that they learn is not through this manual, you know, we make a joke internally how we've gone from automating industrial work or doing industrial work where we used to be doing physical labor. And now we just do digital labor where like people are just kind of like doing this type of very gruesome, boring tasks. And even if you take the conversational AI system, hey, we're big fans, we're complimentary to those tools. They're only like answering the FAQs, right? They're only answering questions that folks are just asking. It's not able to actually take the actions that will go out and support the customer. And those get escalated anyway. And what ends up happening is that even that conversational element is now removed. And now you're kind of like a back office tasker. That's not what a lot of people want from their kind of career and lives, especially when you're spending a majority of it at work. And so Lumina is basically helping kind of change that.
Very cool. 2 points that you brought up I want to hit on. First, careers. If anybody in the world is looking for a job at an awesome company, look into Lumina because this sounds very promising. If I was on the hunt for a job, I'd be begging you to take me because this is going to be a very successful company.
Oh, thank you. Too kind.
I'm serious. This is amazing what you're building. And then the second point you mentioned is in regards to conversational AI. And something we see happening right now is the development of plugins on ChatGPT. Google has announced that they're going to allow third-party apps for Bard. And we are anticipating that large language models will become the next great user interface, just as websites were a little while ago. We're going to have a new way of interacting with brands, and it's going to be through large language models, just speaking and interacting with them with natural language. But it seems to me, especially right now, if you play around with the current plugins, they are heavily limited by functionality. You know, great tool for conversation, but then you start asking the Expedia plugin to start booking things and looking up very specific things. It gets tripped up. They're going to improve all this, but I can't help but wonder, with your technology, are y'all looking into having a complementary relationship with large language models where you are enabling large language models to complete tasks on internal systems based on prompts provided by customers?
So I have two sort of sets of answers for this. One on the large language model side, and then I have one on how does that look at from a future workforce standpoint. On the large language, the problem with a lot of kind of plugins, there's no question. It's 100% going to get better. And now, even if can't accomplish a lot of tasks, there's still, it's very much a toy, there's going to be a day where like every one of those menial basic stuff is 100% going to be done by a ChatGPT-like interface or some other interface that exists at that point. You'd be like, hey, book my flight, and it'll book it. Book my hotel, it'll book it, all of that stuff, they're going to be able to trust and do. There is no question about that. When you go into the enterprise and when you go into sort of the larger companies, they are interacting with a lot of internally built systems that have no or very, very limited API coverage or any way to plug into those systems. One, because they've been built over a long period of time. And two, because like there's a lot of security and compliance risk to actually like exposing those endpoints into something like a large language model. Like, for example, our fastest growing segment within our customer base is actually healthcare. No healthcare company is going to ever give access to some of the stuff that's happening internally just for compliance purposes. And so, yes, all of your typical consumer use cases as to why you want certain tasks kind of done and eliminated will most likely one day, it might be 6 months from now, it might be 4 years from now, but will be taken care of by a ChatGPT-like interface where we as individuals will trust it and let us do it. And I absolutely, fully, believe in that vision. The challenges start coming in when you start working with enterprises that have sensitive data and are large and just have like a historical legacy interface. And also you have third-party services like payer systems, you have insurance providers, you have legacy banking systems, you have a lot of other old school sort of systems that have no like way to integrate into them that you can then expose into a large language model. And just even if, let's say, the compliance stuff is all solved for, it's still a huge sort of separate thing that we need to address. And that's where kind of we see the opportunity where Lumini can kind of become that interface or that integration layer between large language models and the enterprise systems, where we're able to actually plug into those large language models to take those actions. So even today, we offer, you know, how we're talking a lot about kind of this button that you click and it'll generate or it'll take the action on your behalf. We can expose that button in a chat interface even today. And we have a small set of customers who are using it today where they're using that to deflect the like basic sets of questions. What is interesting though, as an individual or as a consumer, most of us, if anything has to do with money or billing questions, we do not want to interact with a bot. We want to interact with a human. So the future of that is where the workforce is very much going to exist and going to help kind of complex questions be answered, but also ensure that we as with individuals, when we're doing transactions, that you have someone else to really talk to on the other side. So that, I think, is never going to go away. And in those sort of situations, Lumini is still acting as sort of, let me take over your action stuff so you can actually spend time with the customer. And I believe in that vision equally. That's sort of where kind of, you know, we see the landscape kind of evolving and truthfully very, very exciting.
Wow. You know, I'm still kind of mind blown just over the basic concept of what you're doing. I'm going to have to go back and listen to this episode myself and just to make sure I'm fully digesting everything we're talking about. And when it comes to the healthcare industry, that makes a ton of sense. And a lot of their data is just not even accessible to utilize these great tools with. I mean, it's just so outdated. Are there any other industries that you've been focusing heavily on so far?
Yeah, our largest customer bases, we focus on three main sort of industries today. The first one, you know, the most common or the one we see the most sort of advantage in and where customers are really happy is sort of retail and e-commerce, the very low-hanging fruit. There's a lot of opportunity for that. We started there. And then our fastest growing segment is healthcare. And then we have a lot of sort of financial services use cases. And so that's kind of our three main kind of groups of customers. And then we have a slew of other ones, all the way from, you know, we work with a bunch of peer, we work with an insurance company. And then, you know, we work with sort of consumer goods companies, or they also, I guess, kind of slowly fall into retail. And we've worked with a company called Strava, for example. It's a social media app. So we have a small slew of other customers, but our main three focus on these three industries.
Very cool. Well, man, those are the main questions I had, just to do a deep dive. Like I said, I am already sitting down, but it's one of those moments where I feel like I need to sit down because I just kind of contemplate. I'm serious. It's kind of like the first time you use ChatGPT and you see technology doing things that you didn't expect it to do for a decade. And this is a huge part of customer support. And as we're heading towards more and more automation, I'm excited because you're going to be able to help a lot of legacy and enterprise companies just operate so much more efficiently. And those are the types of companies that have the tens of thousands of agents, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the big telecom companies, the big healthcare companies. So I can just see you knocking it out of the park with all this. Well, as we wrap this up, do you have any more thoughts or comments you want to share before we close out?
Yeah, I think it's a very interesting shift that's kind of happening. I think there's a lot of excitement. There's a lot of kind of interest and a lot of like curiosity. I started with maybe a little bit of fear and question, especially with the customers we're working with, right? Because it is very much a people-focused business. And we're talking about automation. Folks get kind of scared around kind of, what does this mean for me? What does it mean for my job? What does it mean for my skill set? And the truth is actually, it is leaning more into what you're actually doing and what you want to do, right? Which is now, instead of you like doing all this administrative work that you thought as almost as someone in this world does not need to exist anymore, you can spend all of your time doing the types of things that give you joy. Talking about like, I was in an Uber with someone who's a support agent, as well as an Uber driver. We had a full like, you know, a 1 hour conversation during my ride where she said, this is why I signed up for the support job, because I want to have these types of conversations, but like I'm spending most of my time on other interfaces, not actually talking to the customer. And when I heard that, it continued to kind of, you know, reinforce that preliminary thesis that actually people sign up to do certain work for the core of it and deal with being okay with doing the rest of it to do the core of it. And we're kind of going back to empower them to do the core of it, which is talk to the customer, enjoy your conversations, focus on that while the rest of the admin stuff, you know, software can do it for you.
That is an excellent point. Every profession has the thorn in the side. My wife's a physical therapist, and she talks to me about how she doesn't like doing the documentation, but she loves her profession. If there was a technology that could automatically do all the documentation, she'd be much more efficient, the hospital would make more money, and she'd be a happier employee. I used to be a full-time lawyer for 8 years, billing by the hour for 8 years. Lawyers don't like billing and all the entering timesheets and all that stuff. They can't stand it. Most of them put it off, and then they're trying to like recreate, oh, what did I do that day? And looking at their emails, and it takes so much time to put together. Technology that can eliminate that improves the lives of lawyers. And in the same way, you have call center reps, like you said, spending so much of their time trying to go through multiple interfaces, which probably are not even very user-friendly or fast. And you can just eliminate that, allow them to focus on serving customers, which that's what they have a personality type for serving customers. And that's why they go through the rigorous process of getting the job.
100%. I resonate very deeply.
Awesome. Well, keep up the good work. I'll let you get back to your busy day. I'm excited to see what you're doing. And I'll be in Palo Alto from August 2nd to August 8th. If you're around, I would love to grab some coffee and just continue learning more. I mean, also I just want to start telling all of our clients and our BPO friends about what you're doing. And so put in a newsletter or something.
That would be amazing.
Awesome. All right. Well, have a good one. Special thanks to Keshav for taking the time to be on this show. Absolutely amazing work being done at Lumini. If you would like to learn more about Lumini, Keshav, or myself, we have provided links to websites and LinkedIn profiles in the show notes. I also found on YouTube videos of Keshav in Rubik's Cube tournaments as a teenager and him achieving the Guinness World Record for solving the most Rubik's Cubes in an hour. These videos are incredible to watch, so you should check them out. I also found a video on YouTube of Keshav riding his bicycle across the Silk Road. It's an interview about what he's doing and why he did it, and it provides some additional context for how impressive and interesting of a young man Keshav is. One last thought, I will be in Palo Alto from August 2nd to August 8th, meeting with customer support leaders, entrepreneurs, and investors who are interested in the customer experience industry. If you are a fan of this show, I suspect that you fall into one of those categories, unless you're my mom who just listens because she loves me. So if you live by the Bay Area and you are listening to this, send me a message on LinkedIn. I'd love to bring you a cup of coffee and make a new friend. See you all next week.